This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. He was known as the man with chlorophyll in his veins. J.C. Ralston was among Horticulture Magazine's most significant gardeners and horticulturalists of the past 300 years. J.C. Ralston was a professor of horticulture at NC State University and the namesake of the university's arboretum. He died in a car crash in 1996, but his legacy lives on in the backyards and nurseries of the people of North Carolina. Last fall, he was posthumously inducted into the Raleigh Hall of Fame. An exhibit currently on display at NC State University's D.H. Hill Library celebrates his life and legacy. It's based largely on the biography by Bobby Ward entitled Chlorophyll in His Veins, and Bobby Ward joins me now. Welcome.
Thank you.
Also with us is Molly Renda, the librarian who put together the exhibit. Thanks for being here, Molly.
It's great to be here, Frank.
Bobby, let's start with you. Let's talk about that, about being named one of the top horticulturalists, you know, in the past 300 years. Tell us more about this.
Yes, I was surprised, too, when I learned that Horticulture Magazine was celebrating its 100th anniversary. And part of that celebration, they commissioned a painting of whom they consider to be 30 of the most significant gardens in the past 300 years. It was called a Heavenly Garden Party. And in that group were three people from the American Southeast, Thomas Jefferson and the work he did at Monticello, and also Elizabeth Lawrence, who was a gardener who lived in Raleigh and Charlotte, who wrote really the first book on the American Southeast gardening. And J.C. was included. So I began to wonder, why was he so recognized and so honored by Horticulture Magazine? So I contacted J.C.'s executor, and she gave me permission to access his papers and write about his life. And I learned a lot about him during that process.
You talked about horticulturalists from the Southeast, including Thomas Jefferson, but a lot of other famous names among those 30 selected as the top, including Frederick Law Olmsted.
Exactly, who did Central Park and also did the work at Biltmore Estate in Asheville.
So tell us about him. What was it about his work and how he got interested in horticulture and what he did for us?
Well, he had two passions, I would say. First of all, he had a great love of plants. Anybody that you would talk to would say J.C. must have had chlorophyll in his veins because he talked about plants all the time. And he loved to travel, to go to gardens, public gardens and arboreta, and plant nurseries to discover new plants that he didn't know about. The other passion that he had was teaching. He loved to teach. He won numerous awards and honors at Texas A&M before he came to North Carolina and also at NC State University. And he mentored many, many students, many of whom have prominent places today in arboreta and botanical gardens and also running famous nurseries that are well-known around the world.
Yeah, Molly, tell us more about those nurseries because his travel had a big impact on nurseries in North Carolina, right?
He traveled the globe, really, and was particularly interested in those parts of the world where the planting zones were similar to the Southeast. His passion was also to promote a diversity of planting in both the public and private gardens.
And to that end, he would come back and actually give cuttings to nurseries, right?
Well, in fact, that illustration in Horticulture Magazine has J.C. with his aviator glasses and a little pruner in his hands because he was famous not only for sometimes surreptitiously taking cuttings from various places around that he visited, but also opening up the arboretum to nurserymen and gardeners to take cuttings, which is highly unusual in the sort of arboretum public garden world.
But that would have an effect, wouldn't it, Bobby, and didn't it, on gardens, nurseries, and then ultimately gardens in North Carolina?
That's right. When he came to North Carolina in 1975, he found that there were very few plants being grown here in the landscape. Typically, plants like roses and dogwoods and a few other plants like that, forsythias and phetinias, red-tip phetinias. But he realized that as he traveled around the country, there was only like 40 plants that were being used in 90% of the landscape. So by introducing plants through the arboretum to the nursery industry in North Carolina, he tremendously impacted the kinds of plants that we grow today. The nurserymen would take these plants, test them in their own gardens, and then sell them to the gardening public here in North Carolina. And as a result, we have a great diversity that didn't exist in 1975 when J.C. came here.
Tell us more about the exhibit, Molly, and what we'll see if we visit the exhibit.
Well, among the things you'll see in the exhibit are his personal memorabilia from as early as his earliest childhood growing up in Oklahoma. He was, and I think he learned from his mother, an incredible documentarian. His mother kept meticulous scrapbooks of the family and photographs of him growing up. In fact, our preservation our preservationist at the library gasped when he saw the beautiful mint condition that these items were that we received from the estate. And I'd like to thank Bobby for helping us broker that gift. It's really significant. So people can actually come and study these things after the exhibit's closed. There are childhood drawings and a letter to his aunts saying that at the age of 8, I believe, someday I will have my own garden. And so he knew from a really early age that this was his calling, if you will.
And among the other artifacts that we will see at the exhibit is this jacket. I'll hold it up to the microphone. Can I have better, a little better light? There it is. You see
it? Oh, yes, yes.
You see it? Well, maybe you should describe it.
Well, if people remember David Byrne's jacket, leaf jacket, and wood tree trousers, he was famously photographed by Annie Leibovitz in that jacket.
Talking Heads, right?
J.C. saw it and just longed for it. Another thing J.C. is famous for is having gathered around him an incredible group of volunteers that did so much of the work and continues to do so much of the work at the Arboretum. And one of the volunteers, Mary Edith Alexander, just set her mind to it and made that jacket for him.
And it really is. I mean, it's a bit shiny, but it's leaves. I mean, it's a jacket with wide lapels, kind of dark green and white lapels. But then basically these leaves layered over each other as though you were Arboretum Man.
And he called it the Green Man Jacket. And that jacket, unfortunately, we don't have it at the library. We can't quite wrest it away from the Arboretum, which is really where it belongs. But they've kindly lent it to us for the exhibit.
And that photograph you're looking at there, Frank, was taken on the 20th anniversary of the founding of the Arboretum and was taken just a few months before he died in 1996.
That's on the back of the back cover of your book, the book about, this is a plan and a plan for a better world, J.C. Ralston. This is the catalog,
I should
say. Bobby, also, he's famous. He was inducted in the Raleigh Hall of Fame and is famous, really, for something else because he came out as gay later in his life, but then became a kind of an activist. Tell us about his role.
That's right. He was 35 years old when he had his first experience with another man, rather late, as you say. And he began to realize that there were probably similar people like him in the gardening and horticulture world that also needed a social place to interact and talk to people that were like-minded. So he organized a group called the Lavangela Society. Lavangela is the Latin word for lavender, whose flowers are purple, which is sort of symbolic for gay and lesbians. And he organized this sort of informal group of organization that would meet after hours, usually when there was a professional meeting going on in the Raleigh area or in another city in the United States. They would get together after the meetings were over and have a safe place, I guess you would call it today, where people could interact and talk and meet each other.
And this is kind of the don't ask, don't tell era.
That's right.
The academy and in public, right?
That's right. Exactly.
Well, and also, Molly, known as kind of a maverick in his style, how do you...
Indeed.
So tell us about that and then how you reflect that in the exhibit.
Well, it should be said that I never knew J.C. Ralston. But as an exhibit designer, you really get to know the subject that you're working on. And through Bobby and others, I really felt like I kind of got to know this man. A good anecdote about how maverick he was is that he knew how and when to bend the rules. I surveyed some of my colleagues about stories. I'm trying to gather stories. And by the way, if you come to the exhibit and you have a story about JC, just write it in the guest book or you can get in touch with me separately. But someone who was teaching architecture at NC State had a public garden project, and she thought it would be wonderful for her students to spend the night in the Arboretum as part of their research. So she went through the proper channels and asked his permission. And his response was, no, you know what, gosh, sorry, really can't do that. But if you're on this side of the gate at 5 o'clock when the Arboretum closes...
How did I know?
Exactly. And it was also a maverick gesture to say that people could take cuttings from the Arboretum. You know, we're a land-grant institution, and part of our mission is to better the lives of the people of North Carolina. And in his 20-year tenure at the Arboretum, the number of nurseries doubled from 1,000-something to 2,000-something in, you know, in 20 short years. And he had an incredible impact on that that commercial aspect of horticulture.
Yeah, obviously an impact on the industry itself and on horticulture, and certainly in promoting it in this area. What about his relationships with students? I mean, how did he interact, and how was he known? What's his legacy among students?
Well, he loved to teach, I think I mentioned earlier, and he was very fond of taking students to public gardens and arboreta in his travels. He would mentor them. Many of them became very well known, have become very well known in the gardening world today. He would often take them to see movies. He would take them to see plays. When they would go to to an arboretum or a botanical garden, he would tell them which plants they would go to. And they would start early in the morning at sunrise and go well into the evening oftentimes. And many people whom I talked to said they were actually exhausted. And J.C. was still up going and telling other students where to go, even late at night.
What about, you know, this was I apparently a lesser-known fact about him, and I was startled to hear it. I mean, he served in the Army in Vietnam, but tell us about his assignment.
He was in the Army. He had an Army commitment because when he was at Oklahoma State University, he was in the Army ROTC, which meant that he had an Army obligation. He got a student deferment, but he eventually was drafted into the Army and was assigned to Fort Detrick, which is just outside of Washington, D.C., and was assigned to the Chemical Corps. And in the Chemical Corps there at Fort Detrick at that time, because of the Vietnam War going on, they were doing a lot of work with testing herbicides that would be used for defoliation in Vietnam to defoliate vegetation so the Viet Cong could be found and seen. One project that he worked on was with a herbicide called Agent Blue. Now, there are lots of herbicides at that time which are called the rainbow herbicides, such as Agent Orange, which we all know, Agent Red and Purple and White. But it's one called Agent Blue, which is a combination of arsenic compounds. And J.C. was assigned to go to Vietnam and test aerosol spray cans containing this Agent Blue or arsenic. And the idea was for the soldiers to take them in their backpack and spray these cans of arsenic onto seedling rice plants that were being grown up around villages and huts before the plants were being transplanted to the fields, the idea being that this would be a food supply that would be cut off for the Viet Cong.
Well, how did he ever reflect on that? You said he had a lot of writings.
I talked to a few people who told me that J.C. Did not like that, especially with his background and love of plants. But he never spoke about it publicly, and he never wrote about it, to my knowledge. But a few people that I did speak to privately said he was very concerned about that part of his life. And I did not know anything about it. In fact, I did not even know he had been in Vietnam.
How about, Molly, there are now a number of plants named after him. Isn't that right?
That's right. There are 9 plants that were all posthumously named after J.C., and I just want to point out that the Arboretum is also named for J.C. in what's probably the fastest turnaround of a proposal in NC State history. I think it was he died in December. It was proposed in January, and the Board of Governors approved it in February.
The name change.
Yeah. Which, if you know academia, anything happening that fast is shy of a miracle. I'm going to let Bobby talk a little bit more about the plant itself, but there, the one species introduced by the Arboretum is now was posthumously named for him.
Well, there's a plant called Ralston Allspice, which is sort of sometimes known as Sweet Betsy or Sweet Shrub. One of his students made a cross of that plant a couple of years before he died, and it bloomed the very year that he died. and it was officially named a few years later, called the Ralston Allspice. But other plants that honor him in their name, there's a tulip tree, there's a camellia, there's a hellebore, there's a jasmine, there's an agave, for example. So all of these honor him in their name, and I'm sure there are others will come along later.
We are talking today about the legacy of J.C. Ralston, and we're talking about that on The State of Things. My guests are Molly Renda, who's the Exhibit Program Librarian at North Carolina, one of them at North Carolina State University, and Bobby Ward, who's the author of J.C. Ralston's biography, Chlorophyll in His Veins. I have to ask you about this one, though. There's a kind of a movement now toward more native species, mm-hmm. and not going to ornamentals and not taking species from other places. And I wonder, and that was a trend that I think got going probably shortly around the time, perhaps, and a little after J.C. died. Was he interested in that kind of thing? I mean, is there any tension between what he did and that movement?
Well, J.C. did not make a distinction between native and non-native plants. And so as far as he was concerned, a plant was a plant, and if it had an ornamental attribute in the landscape, it didn't matter what its origin was, he would recommend it if it seemed to work in that particular location. He had a question, for example, you know, what is native? Was it native before Europeans came to America? Or was it native in geological times? And so it didn't bother him, although I understand now that many arboretum and botanical gardens do make a distinction. Mm. But J.C., of course, was worried, as many people should be, about invasive plants, and there's a distinction there, of course.
Did he work on that? Was anything focused
on Not very, very little, as far as I know.
What about his impact on landscape architecture? Obviously, the plants themselves, nurseries, the development of horticulture, but landscape architecture, too?
Exactly. I mean, a lot of the plants that he recommended were really specifically for landscaping, ornamental plantings around the around this region. When he came to North Carolina, the arboretum that he developed was built on poor clay, a poor site to begin with, and so his idea was to test plants in that location that a typical gardener or an average gardener would be faced in trying to landscape their home garden.
And was there any developments in you? Because you're right. You talk about the kind of the clay-like soil in this part of the world. So did he help promote any of the additives, the changes that you would make to make the soil different? In other words, do we know more about how to grow plants not in this soil?
He did. He did make some recommendations with so that the soil could be amended with bark and other sources. But his focus really was, what is the typical landscape here in this region, and how does the average gardener face, and what does he do with it, with the plants that we have available today?
He was actually brought here by James Strobel to expand the university's specifically ornamental woody plant division. I mean, we already had wonderful agricultural practices in fruit propagation and such.
Turf grass.
One of my favorite things about the Arboretum when they opened was there was a parterre, a French parterre, that was built by his students. And in the self-guided tour, it says you'll see the French parterre, you know, modeled after an actual hotel in Paris. And just beyond, you'll see the turf grass test test layouts. And I thought, this is NC State.
Molly Renda, Exhibit Program Librarian at NC State. Bobby Ward, the author of J.C. Ralston's biography, Chlorophyll in His Veins. Thank you both for being with us.
Oh, it was great. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
The exhibit is called Plan and Plant for a Better World. It's up through December 31st in the exhibit gallery at the D.H. Hill Library at NC State. The J.C. Ralston Arboretum grounds are open year-round, and we have all that information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, on the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor, we look back at the only Rose Bowl game ever played outside of Pasadena. Stay tuned.